Hello again, everybody, and welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with episode 39 of Training the Pointing Labrador. And the episode today is going to be for my APLA buddies, my American Pointing Lab Association buddies, who are getting ready to run maybe their first APLA test or their third or their, 47th. But I just wanted to do something to kind of pull it together for people that are a little bit nervous or just want a little help maybe in how to get ready and go enjoy this and be successful and have some fun with it. So today's podcast is about getting ready to run APLA tests. And of course, I just want to kind of make sure everybody's on the same wavelength for this. But there's three levels of this. There's the certified pointing retriever, the advanced pointing retriever, and then the master pointing retriever. And then multiple passes of the master get the grandmaster and the multiple grandmasters on that. So you have three levels. And no matter what it is you want to do, you have to run the certified pointing retriever level first. And there's always been debate, if you hear, especially if you've been around people that have been doing this for a while, there's a debate about, this should be harder and this should be, you shouldn't have to do this one. There's just a lot of stuff. And I'm not going to address any of that because there's a reason generally that it is set up the way it is. And so moving forward with that, so everybody has to run the certified. If you've never done this before, of course you should read the rules on, what it takes. Now, I'm on the rules committee and have been for a long, long time. But I will say they're kind of dry and you kind of read them and then you kind of get lost in the fuzz of reading rules and kind of lose a little bit sometimes in the application. So I'm just going to try to do a little bit of help. I'm not speaking as anyone officially other than somebody who's run literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these things to try and help people out. So we're going to talk about certified first. You have to do that. Even if you have a master national qualifier, super fancy dog, and now you're going to go get it, you want to go for the pointing lab titles, you still need to go do the certified pointing retriever level first. And that has basically two components to it. One is the upland field, and the rules specify, the size that you have to have in there. However, in reality, you're limited to wherever the test is being held and what they have available and, where the cover is that's going to work. So don't, you can't hold everybody totally accountable. This is supposed to be, 5 acres and it's 3.5 or it's 12 or whatever it is. I just strongly suggest, the judges who know what they're doing are going to set up something that's reasonable and fair. You have 15 minutes in the upland field. Birds are put out. They are not marked. Now, you're not supposed to sit there and watch where they put your birds. However, you can watch where they put other people's birds and kind of have a good idea where birds are planted. But there are, for that level, there are three birds you get to choose when you enter. Enter occurs on huntsecretary.com, which is available from the APLA website, or you can just Google that. And you have to enter through that. There is a closing date for that, so make sure you get on there and look at the test that you plan on run or find out which ones are closest to you, and there aren't a lot of them. So sometimes we have to drive a long ways to get to one. But it will tell you the closing date, and the closing date is final. And that's the way that goes. So if you come in a day late and call up and cry into the secretary, you're probably not going to get up because there you have a big job to do. So get in there before the closing date. Enter it. And all of your dog information, they have to be registered AKC or UKC to be able to do this, regardless of if you agree with it or not. That's how that goes. And so then on that entry, you specify between, I believe, chucker and pheasant, which bird you like. And I'll just say what I do. I always put chucker in there because they don't tend to be as hard to plant and they don't tend to just run out of the field when they hear something. They tend to stick a little bit better and tend to be, and they're easier to train with. They're cheaper. They're more available, or at least they're easier to train with. So I tend to train with chucker most of the time, even though we do have pheasant. So if that's what I put in there, I don't want all my birds running out of the field. Because I'll tell you, if they did, if they just kind of ran all out of the field and nobody noticed, I'm just out of luck. You know, and I'm just wondering what's wrong with my dog that day. They can't find any birds. But I chose one that was really hard to do. And if you're somewhere where there's not a lot of cover and stuff, I mean, it can be problematic. So for me, I tend to choose a bird that's going to behave best for the testing scenario. So I use the chucker. But you get to pick that. So you have, and you can pick a mixture, you know, two of this and one of the other, provided the birds are available at the current market. So on your entry, that's what you pick your upland birds. So you have this field, and you have 15 minutes, and you have birds that are placed out there in it. They are not shackled. They are not, there's no mechanical intervention whatsoever. The judges usually tell the planters exactly how, you know, how they want birds put, where, that kind of thing, not too close to the end, or, you know, spread them out this way or that way. That is the judge's responsibility. You don't get to weigh in on it as a handler. And as a handler, guys, no matter what you think about how things were done, you may, at the end of the day, if you want to go be kind of a pest, you can go tell the judges, you know, I didn't like this or I didn't like that. But that doesn't really matter. When you sign up and pay your money and go for the to run this, right, you get what you get. And sometimes it's fantastic, and sometimes it's okay, and sometimes it's not so much. But I've, you know, people, they run their first test and they don't like where the bird was or what happened, and they're very disgruntled and upset. And that's just a waste of your time. You know, do the best you can and prepare, which is why I'm saying this. And then on test day, go do the best you can. And good sportsmanship belongs in the middle of this like it does everywhere else. So I just want to make sure I get that. I think that's very, very important. People don't seem to school people on that anymore. But being a good sportsman, sometimes even when you don't like things, you have to do that. So you have upland. And then the other thing you have in certified is you have two water retrieves of dead ducks. And these water retrieves are splashes in the water, so it's clearly a watermark. You may or may not have decoys in there, because when you're duck hunting, very often you have decoys. So if you don't have decoys to train with and then suddenly you have them in the test, that could be problematic for your dog, where he goes around and goes, there's a whole bunch of them floating around here, and they don't really realize that this is something they need to go on through or buy to go get the dead duck. So you have their two single mark retrieves. You get to restrain your dog with a slip lead around their neck. They don't wear collars anywhere there at all, but you get to restrain them. And they are to be restrained until, you know, the judges tell you when you can release your dog. So you restrain them. There's no reason to have a break because you can hold on. These are things to practice, right? They'll have a duck call, a shot, and a dead duck will go down. So for those of you that have never, you know, have this great upland dog, phenomenal upland dog, he just goes out there and just hammers these points and brings the pheasant or chucker back to you, and you're just assume they're going to go get a duck in the water. Sometimes they will and sometimes they won't. So to the best of your ability, you need to acquaint your dog with going and getting a dead duck in the water. Because many, many times, if they've never seen a duck, it does not smell like an upland bird. And they're kind of yucky if they're not used to it sometimes. And so, and if you get the duck that's been already retrieved, you know, 12 or 15 times, it's really, and then it's got dog spit on it and all kinds of stuff. So it's really good to make sure that your certified pointing retriever knows about wet ducks out in the water and that aren't in perfect condition and aren't floating with big white feathers up highly visible. So you have those two retrieves. It's all in there. You got your slip lead. There's a gun. There's duck calls on that. Two singles. They come out of there. Nobody can see. You know, they kind of come out from behind holding blinds or trees or something, and they splash in the water. And they should be thrown with good judges. They're going to be thrown where they're findable, not into the heavy, deep stuff where, you know, they got to just be Sherlock Holmes to go get them out. Very fair, straightforward tests. If whatever the rules say in the distance, and believe it or not, off the top of my head, I can't tell you what that is. Whatever those rules are, if it says not to exceed, you know, 100 yards or 50 yards. Don't train for that distance. Train for 25 yards, 75, 150 yards. Make sure that your dog can go get the duck wherever it falls, or if it falls and the wind blows and it starts to blow away and your dog's slow getting out there and that thing gets farther and farther, and if they've never been 125 or 30 yards out in the water, they might turn around and come back. So as the trainer and the handler of this dog, it would really behoove you to have the dog ready to go any distance and be very eager to go get the duck if it's close or if it's not as close. So that's something to really plan on to kind of hedge your bets. So, and then in the upland field, we'll talk about that real briefly. That's usually first, right? You can't, no collars. You can't have any training gear on there. You can't have training gear on you. You can't have, choke chains and stuff clanging on you or anything, or carrying a healing stick or anything with you. It's just the dog. You bring them under control, you know, to wherever you go into the field. You come up there with them on their little slip lead or whatever. Have your bottle of water, because this time of year, it could be really hot. So make sure you've watered your dog before. If it's really hot, get them wet before they go in the upland field. Have a bottle of water so you can, or two bottles if it's really hot, so you can make sure they drink. Because when they get really hot and that tongue comes way out, all the air is going through their throat and not through their nose, and they don't smell birds very well, and sometimes not at all. So you need to keep your dog as comfortable and cool as possible. So make sure going in there, you do. Have your water with you, and you have 15 minutes. And there isn't anything in the rules, even though people, I've heard this before, you have to have one point and that's a pass. Or you have to point, if everybody points three birds, your dog has to point three birds. There is, if you read the rules, it is intentionally not terribly specific. Because if it's 100 degrees and you're out in a field and you get one good point, and your dog is diligently working hard and trying to find another bird, and they're starting to get overheated, but your dog is giving you everything and they've worked real hard, that's one point that's probably going to work. However, if your dog goes out there and busts birds right and left and right and left and doesn't listen and is out of control and throws you one good point, but then it takes you, 5 minutes to get the dog back with the bird, that's not necessarily going to be a pass, because so many other components to that are not present. And I should probably do some judging kind of podcasts on this too, to talk to the judges. But you can't make any assumptions. Now, if your dog goes out there and points three birds and brings every one of them back to you, that's a pretty good thing. You know, assuming he didn't go bite the judge, you're probably pretty much in. But there's a lot of things to take into account. It's not just, I got a point, I'm good. And the rest of the time, the dog was out of control, chasing birds, running all over the place. That may not work at all for you. So to the best of your dog's talent and ability and yours, you want them to hunt with you. They cannot be completely independent, out running, chasing stuff all over the place, because the cooperation and the trainability right there is basically zero. It has to be a dog that is working with you, hunting, actually looking for birds in some kind of identifiable way, not just careening through the field, you know, and accidentally encountering some. They need to hunt. They need to point. They must point the bird. And anybody that's been doing this any while knows the difference between a dog that just stopped and is waiting for you and a dog that's pointing a bird. So they have to point it. You may steady your dog, if you can at this level, after the point is well established. You cannot woe them into stopping. You cannot cue them into stopping. If you talk to your dog before it goes on point, the judges will give you probably one chance and talk to you about cueing your dog into something. That dog has to go point it. Afterwards, if you are able to, and choose to steady your dog, you can do that. At no point in here can you yell or intimidate or train your dog. So the judges will talk to you and give you one chance. If you're yelling, if you're screaming, whoa, running across, towards your dog, that can be just an out right there. You may not intimidate your dog. And sometimes when you're real emotional and kind of wired up on this stuff, that happens. You've got to be you know, kind of under control of yourself and your dog as well. So no intimidation. You cannot touch your dog out in the field unless there is a need for it. And I'll give you some examples of that. Let's say you're here in Colorado and you're out hunting and your dog gets a big cactus thing in his toe and he's limping. So then you can tell the judges, you know, I'm going to see what's wrong with my dog's foot. Let them know, and then you can call the dog to you and pick up its foot and pull a sticker or a thorn out or something like that. Or if, you know, you're worried something's in their eye or something's happened, let the judges know, you know, I need to look at my dog. It looks like something's in his eye. And then they'll go, of course, and they'll understand. But you can't reach out and just grab your dog because he's wild and crazy and you're going to try and get him in. You cannot do that. The other place where you can touch your dog if you need to is if you're going to water him. So I always, when I'm out in the field and I need to water my dog, I'll tell the judges, I'm going to water my dog, because I may have to grab them by the muzzle because they don't want to stop and get a drink and make sure that I get water down their throat or, you know, on their head or on their belly or something if they're warm. So you can't touch your dog unless there's a necessity to do so. And then as a courtesy, and you need to let the judges know what that is. Now, based on the territory, you generally can enter the field anywhere you'd like, unless it's a 10-minute walk to the other side, then you don't do that. Generally, if it's just really difficult to go into any place but an obvious one, then enter the field there and then skirt it on the, you know, not on the downwind side, and get to the side where you want to go. You're on the clock now. But if you need to get somewhere, then go on the, again, not the downwind, the upwind side, so they're not smelling birds. Get to the place that you'd like to be, and then go into the field with the wind the way that you'd like. I would suggest before you run, particularly if you're kind of nervous or you're not you don't hunt a lot and you're not real used to this symphony with the wind that you've got to do with your dog, watch what the other dogs are doing out there. Don't necessarily copy what you see somebody that, oh, that's so-and-so, look how they went in the field, I will do that. Watch what happens with the dogs out in the field and the ones that are encountering the birds the way that you would like your dog to do. Watch the dogs. Don't just do something because they have a fancy truck and look like they know what they're doing. Watch what the dogs are doing, and when you see an approach that is something that you like and would do, then go after an approach like that. But if you have the time, if you can, sit there and watch what the other dogs are doing and learn. Learn what's going on in that field. I see people not doing that. Oh, they're at the test and everyone's chatting and talking and, oh, my dog's from so-and-so and, oh, look at this one. Oh, yours is dark. Mine's light. And they, instead of studying what's happening out in the field, so that when they go out there, they are as prepared as they can be. Chat at the ribbon ceremony all you want about whose dog is darker or lighter or whatever, but be really prepared when you go in there. And one of the best ways to do that on game day is to watch and just study what the wind is doing and what the dogs are doing. Where are the birds running? Where do they tend to put them? There's so much stuff that is just a little beneficial if you get a better feel for what you're doing out there. Because when, especially new guys, when you're going into either the upland field or you're doing your watermarks here, and you've trained with your dog and practiced, and normally you're relaxed and you're comfortable when you're training, you know, you go down to the place behind the Walmart and you go, that's where you do some bird work, and you know, or you go to the pond across from the zoo that's open over there, and you're relaxed and the dog's relaxed and they do real well. And now you're coming to an APLA thing and there's all kind of people around and everyone's looking at you and everybody's nervous and you're very tight and nervous. Your dog is going, uh-oh, something's different. This is not how it normally is. And then they reflect that. So they can do all kinds of stuff that you weren't expecting. And everybody's so mystified as to why they're doing that. And it's not because they're in an APLA test. It's because you're at an APLA test and you're really nervous. So, you know, nervousness is part of this. Absolutely. So don't feel, you know, nobody can be, you know, I just won't be nervous. I'll just be calm and relaxed. But what you want to do is, however you need to prepare, you know, go places you haven't been before. Go train with somebody you normally wouldn't train with. Go try to get yourself where you can. You're used to things not being just the same old place, the same old way. You know, get where you're comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable. And then your dog will be okay. But if you're, you know, if this is just, oh God, I'm uncomfortable and I'm not used to this, then your dog will reflect that. So I've seen a lot of things happen, unfortunately, to people, including myself. When, you know, they did everything to get ready, but golly, they were kind of in a state. And then their dog did all kinds of funny stuff and they're really mystified. And it's just because the dog's going, uh-oh, this is not how it normally is. Something's wrong. Oh no. And then they behave differently. So at least think about that. Find a way to get yourself a little more comfortable being uncomfortable. And then your dog will reflect you're still kind of used to this and you're okay. And you have a little bit better shot. Now, that goes for all the other stakes as well, right? That get comfortable being uncomfortable. That's probably one of the most important things. So for your certified stake, make sure your dog knows dead ducks. Make sure your dog is used to doing things in not the same location all the time, but someplace different. Hey, same expectation, different spot. Make sure that they are used to hunting not the same upland field all the time or things exactly the same way. Make sure it's not always you putting the birds out so they just know to follow your scent. You know, there's a lot of ways to try and make sure you're ready for this. They have to really point and they have to, once that bird is produced, you stand still, your gunner shoots it. In APLA, you don't shoot. All you do is operate the dog. But once the bird is produced, you have to stand wherever you are, and the dog has to bring it at the certified level to within one reasonable step of you. So I would say the biggest advice is, you know, run them by a decoy a little bit. Make sure they know ducks. Make sure you know what kind of bird you want, and make sure that they really do know what hunting is and that they're under enough control, you know, that you're not going to be trying to just keep your dog on the property. But they will actually, you know, work with you. This is a team thing. Whole lot of training to that. Most of all, get yourself comfortable being uncomfortable, doing things in not the most idyllic situation. That's going to be very helpful. Now, for the advanced people, again, the upland field, same thing. You got a bigger upland field. I think you got a little more time or whatever, but you got, your dog has to point, hold a point longer. They don't have to be steady in certified or advanced. They don't have to be steady, to wing a shot. You know, it matter of fact, at these levels, if they hold, get their point in and then they go in and grab the dog, that is not the bird. That's not a fail. You know, that's not a good thing. Certainly not something that you want to have happen or is good for the next level. But you're not failed in the test for that. You know, and if they chase the bird a little bit, you're okay. If a dog chases it and leaves the county and you have to get in your car and go get them, okay, that's not useful hunting or in the test. So, you know, don't do that. Have them where you can control them and call them and keep them with you. A lot of people don't do that. I don't know why. But if I'm judging you in any of these stakes and your dog just takes a bird and goes away, you know, I'm going to close my book because you can't hunt with a dog like that because he's not with you. So do make sure that your dogs are somewhat controllable. Again, you don't have, all you have is your whistle and your voice. You don't have collars and any means to mechanically get them back. But before you pay a hefty entry fee, make sure that you're in a position to keep your dog with you at all levels. There's just really no reason not to do that. They have to hold their point for 10 seconds. And then they can, you know, they have to bring birds to you. So it's pretty straightforward. There's a little bit more time in the field, a little bit bigger field maybe. And you got to hold that point before any of the bird producing action begins. For people who are not pointing lab people and have this, what's a 5-second point? And everybody likes to ridicule that. That just means there's 5 seconds before any effort to produce the bird occurs. The dog can't make any effort to produce a bird before that, and people can't. But if, for example, in the advanced, after you get your 10-second count, then, you know, the handler instructs the gunner, if or whoever is going to flush the bird, if you have that option, go walk around here over to the right and come in and do this and that. So that's just the time until things start to happen. it's a 10-second point in the master field, but it could be 3 minutes at point before birds come up. So that's really not indicative of the level of pointing here. It's just something before more action starts to occur. So in the advanced, you tend to do the marks first. I'll say it again, in certified, you tend to do upland first because that's what everyone's so excited about. And if you get through the upland field, if you do the pointing and the retrieving and the hunting and the cooperation at a level that the judges feel, you know, is a passing level, then you go to the next series, which is generally, not always, you guys, sometimes it's reversed. Then you go do your two water retrieves, your two water marks of ducks. And again, you come out of the holding blind, you have your dog on your little slip lead, you're holding on so they don't break, because you fail if they break. You have total control over this. Practice this before you go out there. And if that dog, you know, and the judges, you'd let the judges know when you're ready, they signal, bird goes down, they let you know when you can let the dog go. You let them go, the dog has to bring it to within one step of you. And they're usually pretty lenient about that stuff. Then you take the bird and hand it to the judges and do your second one. If you fail the upland series, you do not run the watermarks. This is not like some of the other testing venues where even if you fail, they let you keep running through. Because otherwise, we'd have to have 3 days or 4 days sometimes for APLA tests. So it's an elimination approach to this. So if you fail the upland, no, you don't do the watermarks. Or if the watermarks are first and you fail, no, you don't do the upland. So that's how, because of time constraints and judges who want to get home, you know, they have to get back to work Monday morning. And they'd be there till the sun went down and later, if we let everybody do everything. So that's never been real feasible in this venue. So that's the certified. Now, in the advanced, generally, again, it could be either way. Sometimes they might have the upland first. That takes the most time. Generally, they have the marks first because that takes less time. So you can get more dogs through. And then if anybody doesn't make it through that, then you at least you have fewer running the upland field. So in the advanced, you have a blind not to exceed 40 or 50 yards that cannot be related to the mark. So it's a blind by itself. You have a land double, which is a very straightforward, not super trick. Look how clever I can be making this hard, but a straightforward double. The dog needs to be steady. You may speak to them, however. And then you have a very straightforward water double. And again, I wish I had this for judges. Not a tricky thing, not two shorelines, not an angle entry, not something that requires the dog having been through the swim by water force technical water training, but that they will go do two water retrieves. They understand a double. They sit and they wait and they watch two birds go down and they go get the one they were sent for and then they go get the other one. So straightforward stuff. You don't have to have a fully tricked out finished dog. And so you have land double, you have a water double, and you have a land blind that is not in sight of the other of the gunning stations, not in sight of the marks, but is completely by itself, non-related, blind. And on the blind, you guys, on the blind, that means that it's out there. They go when you send them. They stop when you stop them. And then they go again. They can't run at a 45-degree angle way downwind of the blind and finally wind it and then run, you know, 30 yards over and pick up the bird. It needs to be reasonable, not fancy trick, grandmaster level, but reasonable progress toward that land blind where the dog is under control, is not hunting, goes when you send them, stops when you tell them. And it doesn't have to be super trick, but, and they do not hunt. And this is on at all levels. They don't hunt on a blind. Do not let them drop their nose and start covering ground. This is a blind retrieve, a retriever part of this, and they are to disturb as little ground as is reasonable and make as good and direct progress towards a blind as possible. Then again, so make sure that you understand that part. If you just send them out and they hunt their way to it, that's probably a fail because you never handled them. You never made this a teamwork thing to as efficiently as possible get to the other bird. Now, all of these are dead ducks as well. So everyone that's at the advanced level has definitely been through certified. So we do know they know the duck thing. And so you've got the ducks and the watermarks and landmarks and land blind all separate. No collar, no nothing, just you, the dog, your whistle. You can't wear white stuff. You can wear basically anything that's not super, super like cheat and helpful like white. You can wear hunting stuff, darker clothes. Just choose wisely. Choose something if you do have to handle. If the dog turns around and looks at you and you're against a bunch of dark green trees, you're not in a dark green shirt. Make something where at least you know you're going to show up and be visible. And if you're standing against a skyline, you know, and you got a shirt that matches that, then you're also going to be hard to see. So just choose wisely so that you know when you're handling your dog has a good chance of seeing you. You just can't use heavy contrast white or something like that. You can't wear black. Black is fine. It's the white that's not going to be allowed. Now in the master, now we got a little different deal. Okay, you have 20 minutes in the upland field. You've got four birds out there. Or is it three now? Four birds out there. You have three in advance, three in certified. Don't hold me to any of this stuff in case any of the rules have recently changed. You've got four. You've got two pheasant and two checker. That's what you have in the master. It's already pre-decided. And you got 20 minutes. And you've got generally a bigger field. Now, one of the things I want to make sure that and let handlers know, because sometimes judges can give you a little bit erroneous information at all levels. At certified, you have 15 minutes. At advanced, you have whatever it is, 15 or 20 minutes. At master, you have 20 minutes. So you have that. So for example, let's just use certified. If your dog goes out and you bump, let's say you bump three birds. It, you know, upwind, I mean, not intentional, not the dog going in there producing it, but three birds came up, you know, while your dog was out there, and you know he's a good pointer, and you know, that this isn't really normal, that it used to, and it's been 8 minutes, okay, you have seven more minutes, unless there's something very compelling, you know, like we have to get these dogs, it's very hot, your dog is overheating, you know, or we only have another hour and a half, and we still got 10 dogs, so unless there's a real compelling reason, you can stay in that field. Unless, do not overheat your dog, folks, ever. But if there were three birds that flew up, the judge can't tell you, you're out. You know, there's your three birds. You can, unless there's something else going on, you can say, well, I'd like to, you know, I have seven more minutes. I want to keep hunting. Because sometimes if you can, you know, make your approach to the birds be a little bit more useful to your dog, you can go in there and get several points, and then you're going to be okay. So do remember, unless there's mitigating circumstances, this is your field. Hunt it the way you want to on all levels. If it gets things get a little wobbly in the beginning, then go ahead and, you know, calm yourself, relax yourself, stop for a second. Readjust, think about this, and then go at it again. And a lot of times you can kind of save yourself. I'm saying this from experience. There's times I thought it was all over. And then when I just kind of got myself back together again and went through the field and just was a little bit calmer about things, then things came together really nicely and saved myself. So it's your field, and nobody can just tell you unless, you know, if you're in the master field and your dog goes in there and grabs a bird, you're out. Because that's an absolute fail right there. But if your dog does that in the lower stakes, you know, just do what you can to kind of keep yourself together and keep going at it. Because that's not a you're out right there like it is at the higher level. So do remember these are your fields. And so the master, anyone that's listening to me, they know what that is. You got doubles and blinds, land and water. You got a diversion somewhere being thrown. And then you've got to point the birds. You can't catch them. You can't chase them. You can't break. I think you get one control break, right? So you may speak to your dog and all of these things, read the rules. So you have a lot of control over what happens. What I see happen a lot is when people aren't sure what the rules are. There are no mulligans, and I think we had this controversy earlier. There are no reruns, and by that I mean if you send your dog on a mark, you're running the landmarks, watermarks, I don't care, and the birds go down, and the judges say dog, or they release you, and you send your dog, and he goes out there and then starts chasing a squirrel, You can't call him back and redo this, right? Just like in hunting, this is, if you sent your dog on the mark and something funny happens, you have to handle. That's what you have to do. You may not, at the APLA, call the dog back and redo the thing, right? I don't think we've written in the rules that there are no mulligans, but I'm telling you, there are no mulligans. Once you have committed and sent your dog, then you have to follow through and finish that. Okay, those are the rules. We had some controversy about that. I know there's other venues where they do kind of let you do that kind of stuff. AKC does not, and the APLA does not. Once you commit to sending your dog, you have to follow through and finish on a bind, on a mark, on whatever it is. No calling them back and doing it again. The dog has, I think, one control break in the upland field, I believe. But a control break, folks, and this is not explicitly written in the rules, is not that they get almost to the bird and you call them back. That's a dog that broke. A control break is where your dog is trying to go after a bird and you prevent him from going after the bird. You stop them and get them back. So make sure that you understand that if your dog is going to leave before you send them, that you do something about it. And that's a control break. But if they break and go, you're out. You're in the master. You're out on a break. Your dog cannot break. But you are allowed to speak and control the situation. One of the things that I really, for all you master guys, and advanced to a certain, but all you master guys, and even certified, when people go out in the upland field, they're very, very, very nervous. And I don't, I'm nervous too, but I'm nervous about, we're all nervous, okay? So you go out there and you're nervous. But what you have to do is, again, get comfortable being uncomfortable. If all the chucker are pooling up over here in this one little bottom right here, and there's some brushes and bushes and stuff down there, and all the chucker, so there's sometimes like, at first there's three or four, now there's eight, nine, a little later there's like a dozen of them down there. Do not head down there with your dog. Because if they go in there and just birds are flying up everywhere, depending on the experience of your dog, that might be a little much to handle. So when it seems like the situation is not good, then get out of there before something bad can happen. If you saw a pheasant just running down a windrow right there, just running down a row, do not head right after that with your dog. Because what are they going to want to do? Even the real trained one, they're going to want to maybe give chase, maybe some of them. So try not to walk into a situation that could become problematic. Just be aware of that. Now, exact flip opposite of that, what I see just as much as that, people running in the master field, is people who they have a plan in their mind. And we've all done this. I have done this. I should have a podcast of all the mistakes I've made. But they have a plan. Okay, I'm going to go over there to the right. And then when I get to that corner, I'm going to come back and kind of bank left across there. I'm going to be down. And they have this plan in their mind. And they're sticking to it. And they stop paying attention to their dog. When I've watched people doing this, and they go out there, and their dog all of a sudden detects a bird, you can tell the bird dog is going, "Ooh, there's a bird here." They haven't seen that yet because the dog hasn't, locked on a point or something. And so the dog is getting birdy, and they're trying to get in there and find out, and they call them off. And I've said this in my other podcast, they call them off. And I've seen this, and they call them off, and the dog's like, "Rip, what? What? There's a bird over there bringing them over because they need to get them downwind over here." And I've watched some people call them off two or three times. About the second or third or fourth time you do that with a dog, when they find a bird, they go in and get it because they are so tired of hunting and being called off birds because the person did not have enough. They were so nervous about following their plan that when the dog was on a bird, they didn't quite pick up on that, and they wound up calling them off. So be uncomfortable, be comfortable about being uncomfortable, and watch your dog. And when they tell you that they're getting birdie, and it's a good thing, then don't mess with them. Now, if they're getting birdie because they're smelling 12 chucker coveyed up somewhere, might want to just move away from that, unless your dog is, you know, can handle that situation, and some can't. So, golly, again, that's just being comfortable being uncomfortable, where you can walk in and kind of know, yeah, this situation's going to be okay, or this is not one I want. But you really have to constantly, 100% of the time, be tuned into your dog. My rule for my own personal clients is never take your eyes off your dog. You know, I'd rather you step in a hole almost, but not lose contact, awareness of what your dog is thinking and where they're going and what they're doing. Now, exactly now to counter that, I'll tell you one of the biggest mistakes I ever made. It was a dog named Zia that I trained. She was one of the youngest. Her record was beat, but she was one of the youngest 4Xs ever, 22 months. Just an amazing, fantastic dog. And I was up in South Dakota running her with one of my favorite judges of all time, Judge Amy. And we were in heavy stuff, really heavy, that heavy CRP. They get such heavy cover up there sometimes. And we didn't have our fourth time yet, but we were working on it. We were two or three somewhere in there. And she's hunting just beautifully. And she goes out of sight in this real deep stuff. And I'm uncomfortable now. And this is like a high liability dog. Everybody knows her. Everybody has real high expectations. You know, I can't screw this up. And she goes way out, down, and out of sight in this green stuff, or heavy stuff. And I call her. Nothing. I whistle her again. And this is my serious whistle, right? Get in here. You know, I can't have you hunting way out there where I can't see you. Nothing. Now, most of you listen to this going, well, she's on point, numbskull. But I'm going, oh, no, she's gone too far. Oh, my goodness. And I'm whistling and whistling, and now I get my whistle, which means, you know, you better get in here or life is over. So here she comes through carrying this hen pheasant. So she had been on point the whole time while I'm yammering and yelling, and I don't wonder what she thought. And when I finally had that one that, you know, is very well understood, no matter what on earth is happening here, you get back to me. She just went forward, picked up that bird, and brought it to me. So I didn't trust my animal because I was nervous. And so I just, you know, took the bird, handed it to the gunner, said, thank you, judges, leashed her up, and walked out. 100% handler error with a phenomenal dog. You know, and I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. So, again, I don't know why it didn't even cross my mind. There's a reason she's not coming when you call her. She was on point to this thing. She probably thought I lost my mind. So when you're in the master field particularly, you really have to be able to think. And when you're in that heavy, dense stuff, you know, you got to know your dog and you got to trust your dog. And if they're on point and nobody can see them, they better point a long time till you guys can get them in sight, because that's the only time the judges can start their count, is when they see the dog on point. Not when you tell them, but when they see the dog on point. So the hardest part of all of this is staying on task in the upland field and making sure stuff you don't want to have happen didn't happen, and that stuff you do want to have happen does. When you get an older, real, you know, seasoned dog, then you just kind of follow them through the field and things are great. But when you have those young hunyaks, you know, that are not fully 100% where they're going to be in a year or two, it really helps if you kind of just stay calm. You know, when trouble is getting there, make sure you kind of get out of it. Trust your dog in the end, because you're not running the master because you don't think the dog's very good. And be comfortable being a little bit nervous. I kind of clench my fists, you know, it's like, oh, golly, I can't do anything. And know that everybody else feels like that. And know that the judges, they know that too. They all have felt like that. They know what it's like. And everybody's kind of on your side. They really are. And so try to the best you can, you know, get your dog as ready as possible. And then go in there and if you can, to the mess, you know, go, all right, training's over, man, it's game day. There's nothing to do but go enjoy this. But stay on top of it. Just make sure you give your dog every opportunity at all levels to do what it is they do well, and don't do anything to kind of mess it up. And again, always be thinking. Always be comfortable being nervous and a little bit uncomfortable with this. So I wish everybody to have a fabulous season and get every title that you want on these guys. I hope you have fantastic judges and great tests. And let me know if there's any specific questions you guys have on this before the tests get going. It's just, I think, 2 weeks till my first one, and then I'm going to be out of sight for at least a few weeks chasing a few titles on some dogs. So I wish you guys well. This really is fun. Remind yourself of that, especially when you're out in the field and it's getting kind of gnarly. And there's more tests. This is not brain surgery, not life stuff. Go enjoy it, and there's always more tests if things go a little funny. Talk to you soon.